I expect that most of you know the name Stephen King, the horror novelist from Maine. I grew up in Maine. His second published book was Salem's Lot. The setting was Jerusalem's Lot, the fictitious town between Falmouth, Maine, where I grew up, and Yarmouth, Maine, just north of Falmouth. Except, of course, there is no Salem's Lot. It's a fictitious town because there is no place between Falmouth and Yarmouth. They are right next to each other. So there's no there for his novel. Although he did write about a number of landmarks that that I grew up around. And so, as I said about that book, it's a good book in the daytime, and it's a great book at night. I don't read Stephen King anymore because I can't sleep after I read Stephen King. All that by way of saying geography is important, even if it's not accurate, like in this story. There is no region between Samaria and Galilee. Imagine someone writing just after the Civil War saying, Jesus was traveling in the region between the North and the South. There really isn't. The Mason-Dixon line is pretty thin. So there's no geography there, but there's plenty of politics. Luke's gospel is full of politics. The feelings of Southerners and Northerners shortly after the Civil War, and even in some places now, much like the feelings between Samaritans and Galileans. You know how Northerners, Yankees, and Southerners feel about each other? Same there. They felt the same way and acted the same way, often violently. So this vignette of a healing and one going back to say thank you, it's not just as simple as a kind of Hallmark moment. It's more complicated. All 10 of those men who knew who Jesus was, they called him by name and by reputation. Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. And 9 of them would have known Jesus as a fellow countryman, a compatriot, a brother in faith, someone who was on their side. But this Samaritan, when Jesus told those 10 men to go show themselves to the priests to get cleared to go back into society, 9 of them would have said, sure, head to Jerusalem, go to the temple. But one of them, the Samaritan, would have immediately remembered that he had no temple to go to because the people of Jesus' tribe, a couple of generations before, had destroyed his temple. It was a little different for him. Maybe that guy was just overcome with gratitude. But it was more than that. The story makes clear he had to let go of some pride and resentment to turn around and go thank someone who was of the tribe of his sworn enemies. This is certainly a healing story, absolutely. But it's also a conversion story. This man had his life turned upside down, the picture on the bulletin, and then he had his life returned to him. And so he was turned around and went back. And because his life was turned around, his heart was also turned around. This wasn't just some guy remembering as he's leaving the clinic he should go back in and pay the copay, paying his percentage of the healing. Nope. This was someone who had lost his friends, his family, his job, his community. He'd lost his life, essentially, because this disease made him an outcast. A skin condition. Don't know for sure whether it was Hansen's disease, that's real leprosy or eczema or psoriasis, or they were all lumped in together, and it was enough to keep him away from his other life. And as amazing as it might be for someone to be healed of their eczema, this man, it was more than that. He'd been traveling in a region between life and death, and he'd been given a chance at life again. Life was returned to him. I can barely begin to imagine the gratitude. As in the children's sermon, I've had a few turnarounds in my life where it was turned upside down, and then, sometimes slowly, sometimes more quickly, it was returned to me. I have a trash bag full of joint braces at home. Fortunately for me, it was that surgery was my left knee, and so I could still drive. It didn't turn my life completely upside down, but it sure made it difficult. And it was easy to focus on the cost and the pain, the time-consuming physical therapy, the inconvenience. Easy to focus on that, and certainly for many who go through a life-changing, a catastrophic illness or injury, for many of them, they never get their lives back. But I do hope that they can have some awareness that the love and support of family and friends and health professionals can support them in whatever new life, whatever comfort and care they receive. But for all of us, I think, countless times, we've been through times when maybe it didn't turn our whole lives upside down, but it certainly made things inconvenient. And through that, like in the last 2.5 years, for some, it's been a catastrophic illness. For some, mostly an inconvenience, the pandemic. But for almost all of us, we've also learned some new skills. I know I've connected with friends and distant family members on Zoom calls. So there are gifts that have come through this. We've become resilient, living in this time between the old normal and what we're still trying to discover might be a new normal. So I've had time to get over my resentment about the inconvenience and the costs of the change in the way we live. And it turns out I've discovered apparently the world does not owe me life on my own terms. Life doesn't owe me anything. Not always, but at least occasionally I get a glimpse that life is not something owed to me, but is in fact a gift. In a couple of minutes, you're going to hear a temple talk from Jim Talley. I now know what he's going to say because he said similar things at the 9 o'clock service. So I can guarantee that he is not going to tell you something like Jesus said to the lepers, go show your checkbook to the priests. I don't want that. I don't want to see your checkbook. I don't want to see my checkbook. Too much math involved, so no thank you. But I think he is going to remind you that this is about gratitude. There are ways to express, tangible ways to express gratitude. So I'd like to suggest this. Right after Jim speaks to you, the offering plate will come around. And a lot of us give online or in other ways that we don't put anything on the offering plate on Sundays because it goes electronically. But I'd like to suggest that at the offering time, we think about that not as some way of heavenly health insurance copay. So we toss in a percentage of what we think we owe. It's a moment in time when we get to turn around like that Samaritan did and go back, retrace our steps, if you will, and go back and pay attention and give thanks to God and follow Jesus for a while. It's a time of looking at our own skin, our own lives, our own gifts, our jobs, our families, our friends, everything that we have been given, and to say thank you. For me, I have to admit that often it becomes a time of conversion, too, of being reminded that I have no, as I call it, pride of ownership, that this belongs to me because I worked for it. I had the opportunity to work and be part of a community, and I have an opportunity to share. It means asking God to remind me where this life and the next have come from and are still promised. Thanks be to God.